What's going on, everybody? It is that time again. The Sooners Illustrated Podcast, episode 287 on this Tuesday, July 28th, 2026. Josh Calloway, Tom Green with you. 38 days until kick. Fall camp is next week. We are getting really close. And today we're starting our position preview series. We do this every year. We go through the roster one at a time. We're going to do the first two today, quarterbacks and running backs, set the table for those positions for the 2026 season. We'll also recap the preseason SEC stuff we got late last week. A little bit of hoops news on the back end as well. So it's a nice Tuesday show. We're getting close. Fall camp coming up. And it's a good time to subscribe to Sooners Illustrated. Be with us every day. You can do so with the promo code on your screen for watching on YouTube, SoonersPod60. That'll get you a 60% discount to Sooners Illustrated and the entire 24/7 Sports Network. Be with us every single day. It's the right time. Fall camp coming up next week. We're really excited to get this season started. It's going to be a big, big year, and we're very pumped to get it going here very, very soon. As for today, like I said off the top, position preview series. You know, I said it last week, Tom, when we were kind of recapping media days, that that's one of those tent poles of the offseason. For us, this is another one. We do this every year. We comb through the roster. We go two positions at a time just to set the table for the season. It's one of those kind of signs that we're getting close, and we're going to do the first two today. Let's start right at the top where we always do with quarterbacks. So interesting spot here because obviously at the top, John Mateer returns as the starter. The rest of the room, Michael Hawkins is gone. He's off to West Virginia. You bring in the freshman, Bo Bentley. Whit Neubauer is back. Jet New also back in this room as well. But obviously, Tom, all the attention for obvious reasons is on Mateer. You know, the expectations were so high last year. Great start. Post-thumb injury was never really the same, all that stuff that everyone knows. What are your thoughts on the QB room going into the season, and obviously in particular on John Mateer? It feels like, and we touched on this a little bit last week, he said all the right things, he's doing all the right things, he's healthy, feels like he's poised for a big year. How are you feeling about Mateer and I guess the QB room at large heading into the season?
I think generally speaking, you feel pretty good about John Mateer going into his second year in the system. You know, we saw it with Dylan Gabriel from, you know, 2022 to 2023, where he kind of took his game to another level in his second year after transferring to Oklahoma. And I think, you know, the Sooners expect a similar jump in production and just performance from John Mateer now that he's healthy. You know, there's been so much made this offseason about you know, the tweaks he made to his, you know, throwing mechanics, just little adjustments, you know, having a better foundation when he's in the pocket and when he's on the move. And just the way he kind of approached the season with, you know, intentionality, like we discussed before. It's like he's been very meticulous about the way he's gone about kind of figuring out what he needed to work on and how he needed to make those improvements. And, you know, I think Oklahoma should feel really good about him going into the second season. Obviously, you know, he's had a long history with Ben Arbuckle. You know, they're more comfortable together heading into this second year at Oklahoma. And like big picture, you have to look at it. Only six SEC teams return a starting quarterback this season.
Yeah.
Oklahoma's one of them. So just like in the grand scheme, like you figure Oklahoma's going to have at least, you know, top half, maybe top third of the league quarterback play. Certainly there's some very talented quarterbacks in the league, Gunnar Stockton, you know, Lenore Sellers, Arch Manning, Marcel Reed, those types of guys. Trinidad Chambliss, how could I forget?
Yeah, sure.
So there's some solid proven quarterbacks in this league. And I think John Mateer should be able to play well enough to kind of get in that upper echelon conversation this year.
Yeah, I feel pretty good about John Mateer. I really do. You know, he's convinced me with what he has said throughout this offseason of kind of like that the thumb, you know, and it's always a delicate because you're trying to toe the line and not just make a bunch of excuses for him. We talked about that throughout the season. Like the decision making wasn't always great. The interception in the playoff game, the pick six was horrific. He's talked about that. All those things are fair, but the thumb and the health was certainly a huge part of it. And we talked about last week where you talked about the mechanics and having to get under the ball. And just it feels like him being healthy again, he knows the adjustments he had to make. And just like you said, year two in the SEC, that was a huge jump in competition for him. He's going to be much more comfortable just being at Oklahoma in that spotlight. He feels like he's in a really good headspace. It just – I'm kind of in. I'm in on him making a huge jump. And that's not to say like he's going to be in New York. He's going to be all SEC. Like he's going to be a first round draft pick next year or something. But it feels like he is poised to have a very nice year and to definitely take a step forward. Now, you got to keep him healthy this time, obviously. That's a little bit in his play style. You're going to always kind of cringe a little bit because he's going to take hits. He runs the football. Like, that's just how he plays. That's part of his style, right? You don't want to take that away from him because that's what makes him good. But at the same time, you just, I don't know, it's hard not to feel like you're going to get a better version. And again, last year, through the first month, he was really good. I mean, he was probably the Heisman Trophy winner after September of last year. I mean, against Michigan, against Auburn, he was dynamite in those games. And he still had moments later in the year as well, whether it was in Knoxville or Tuscaloosa. Like, he played good football at times. It just, there was some really ugly stuff kind of sprinkled around it. And the offense around him wasn't very good. That should be a lot better, right? Obviously. Yeah. As we go through the rest of this position preview, running back way better, you would hope. Wide receiver, tight end, we talked a lot about. Brent Venables has talked a lot about those being significantly upgraded. Offensive line should be good. So, like, the talent around him should be significantly improved, and that should only help things, because a lot of the year last year felt like Mateer kind of was the offense. Like, go make plays and score points for us, and you got to kind of do it all yourself. It shouldn't be that way this time.
Yeah, that's exactly the point I was going to make. Like, he has a better supporting cast around him. Like, last year was basically him and, like, Isaiah Satania, and then whatever
was it,
healthy running back you could trot out there for 15 carries a game. You would expect that, you know, the improved supporting cast around him will make his life easier and make him a more productive quarterback and make this offense kind of level up after kind of being toward the bottom of the SEC last season.
What about the rest of the room after him, with Whit Neubauer and Bo Bentley, the freshman coming in? Because, look, the reality is that every year under Brent Venables, they've needed the backup quarterback. It's not a conversation anyone wants to have. It's not a reality anyone wants to think about. But, again, every year under BV, they've needed to use multiple quarterbacks. 2022, they had to go to Davis Bevel for a game. 2023, they had to go to Jackson Arnold and Provo, remember, obviously. 2024, Arnold and Hawkins went back and forth. And then, obviously, last year, John Mateer missed a game. I mean, the reality is that it's very possible that he will, you know, get banged up. And even if it's not for a game where he missed a start, it could be like, you know, he loses a game early or whatever, you know, a series. Yeah. I mean, you know, I talked about with Brody a few weeks ago, like, the backup. It kind of feels like Whit Neubauer is probably the guy right now, if you had to pick, but you still have fall camp to go. Like, Bo Bentley, you don't have to worry about the red shirt thing anymore. So that certainly kind of helps. That sort of thing, you could throw Bo out there with a little more reckless abandon. You have to worry about, like, the number of games and things. The rest of this room, though, I mean, how do you feel about if John were to miss a game? Like, it's an interesting room because you don't have a guy with starting SEC experience like you had last year, limited with Michael Hawkins, but it was at least something. You don't have that this time.
Yeah, I think in the current landscape of college football, it's really difficult to build depth at quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ole Miss was very fortunate last season that, you know, they went into the season with Austin Simmons as kind of their anointed guy, and then he gets hurt and Trinidad Chambliss just comes out of nowhere and becomes one of the best quarterbacks in the country. But like you said, they're very unproven. Like, they have only a handful of FBS snaps behind John Mateer. Like, Whit Neubauer has started games, but that was at the FCS level. And, like, he did some good things as a true freshman at Mercer. Now, like you said, I think he has the upper hand for that backup job right now. But I don't know. I just don't know how confident you can be behind John Mateer with kind of that lack of, you know, experience there. Like you said, if, you know, something were to happen to John Mateer, I would imagine that Whit Neubauer would be the guy they turn to right now.
Yeah,
Especially like if it was an SEC game or something, just like throwing a true freshman out there against some of these teams would be really difficult with Bo Bentley. And I know Bo had an up and down spring, but they're really high on his, you know, long term upside there. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to be confident about what they have as the backup options right now, just because you don't really know what they are.
For sure. And the way Brent Venables kind of talked about it in Tampa, he kind of made it sound like Whit Neubauer would be that guy right now. Now, if John were to, and this is a very dark scenario, but if John were to, like, go down for the year in, like, you know, week three or something, it feels like they probably would hand the keys to Bentley at that point, but maybe not. You know, I mean, just to kind of see what you have when it's like in a pinch, you know, he goes down in the third quarter in Ann Arbor and needs someone else to finish the game. It feels like Neubauer would be the right life move. But who knows? You got a whole fall camp to go. I mean, Bo had a good spring, but he is a true freshman, right? He's a true freshman. It's really hard. Even the most talented guys right out of high school, it's asking a lot to do it in the SEC. So I don't know. It's something you hope doesn't come up. But again, like we said before, the reality is it has. I mean, pretty much every year, literally every year under Brent Venables, they've needed both quarterbacks or their first and second guy. And so, you know, we'll see, obviously, how it all plays out. Hopefully John stays healthy, but it could come up. All right, so we always close this out with 1 to 10. Confidence rating in the position. It's kind of a roundabout way of ranking the positions when it's all said and done. Where do you go? 1 through 10 in your confidence level in this QB room. 10 obviously would be no worry at all. 1 would be you're smashing the panic button. How are you feeling?
Yeah, maybe 7.5, 8. Yeah. I'm kind of in that range. Like, again, like you feel really good assuming John Mateer can stay healthy. Like you said, you're kind of buying the stock in him, maybe buying the dip a little bit after a disappointing first season there. But, you know, I think that they're really confident what he can do in year two. But again, the lack of proven number two option behind him just kind of leaves a lot of questions for me as in terms of just like the overall grade you can give there.
Yeah, helps for football season. I'm with you. I mean, I'm right in that same ballpark. I was going with an 8 out of 10. Is kind of what I was thinking. Because, like I said before, I feel really good about Mateer. I do think he's going to take a step forward, and you know, you can't go much higher than that. I wouldn't think. Because at the same time, you have to be fair about it, right? I mean, he had some issues last year, and you know, he's not a preseason All SEC quarterback. I mean, the expectations are high. You feel good about him. But at the same time, you know he needs to improve. He needs to take a step forward. I think he will, but you need to see it. And then, yeah, the backup options, it's a little worrisome because you just don't have any experience at all. And so if John were to miss some games or, you know, even a game or go down mid-game, what does that look like? I don't know. So I go 8 out of 10. Feel good about it. I'm confident in John Mateer. I feel like Oklahoma can win a lot of games with John Mateer. But what if he gets beat up? What does that look like? And so we'll go 8 out of 10 for the quarterback room. All right, let's do another one. Let's stay on offense. We'll do two at a time throughout this series each week. It'll lead us right to the first week of the season. Let's go to running backs. Really interesting position. It's the one, you know, we talked about it a lot with wide receiver and with tight end, where they went really hard in the portal. Transform is the word that Brent Venables used about those two positions. They did not do that really at running back. They brought in Lloyd Avant. That's their one portal addition who's had a great offseason. Talked about that with Brody a couple weeks ago. He had a good spring. He's had a really good summer. They're excited about Lloyd Avant and what he could add. They signed a couple freshmen that obviously turned some heads back in the spring, and everyone's very excited about it, Jonathan Hatton and DeZephon Walker. But the expectation, Tom, I mean, certainly you would think going into August, going into fall camp, is that Xavier Robinson and Torrey Blaylock, who were your top two guys last year, are in line to be your top two guys again in 2026, if all goes to plan, right? But those guys were beat up last year. They both missed spring. Where are you at running back? I mean, it's been talked about to death. They have to run the football better, right? It's been the talking point, the emphasis of the offseason for Oklahoma. You have Xavier Robinson going to year three, Torrey Blaylock going into year two. Dylan McCullough takes over as coach, obviously, for DeMarco Murray. It's a very interesting position right now that kind of feels like one of the bigger, you know, I'm going to say question mark. That sounds negative, but it's you don't really know what to expect, frankly, from this group right now going into fall camp.
Yeah, I'm of the camp that I think I expect Oklahoma's run game to be better this year.
Yeah.
I don't know who it's going to be that kind of steps up. Like you said, this might be the biggest question mark on the offense for me just because it's feels like the least settled position, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You know, you bring back your top two running backs from last season, Xavier Robinson and Torrey Blaylock. You know, you add a versatile guy in Lloyd Avant who, you know, can do some different things and really had a strong spring practice and a good offseason. But, you know, and then the two freshmen. But it's like, I don't know who the top guy in that room is going to be. I think right now, like assuming good health, and we know that Torrey Blaylock and Xavier Robinson have been cleared after, you know, Torrey was held out of the spring from, you know, recovering from those shoulder issues, and X had a calf strain that he had early in spring, and he's back now. So I think assuming health, that I would kind of give Xavier Robinson the nod right now going into fall camp. You know, just because when he's been healthy, what he's been proven to do when given a like a sizable load out of the backfield, I think you really like that there. But you know, we talked about it, like Lloyd Avant. I would not be surprised if he emerges somehow as like the top guy in that room eventually, just because, you know, he's got a little bit more experience. He can do a couple different things. I can split him out wide, you know, move him around in the backfield. So I'm really curious to see how that shakes out. But, you know, from the addition of Dylan McCullough to kind of just infusing the room with some new faces, whether that's Lloyd Avant, whether it's Dezevon Walker or Jonathan Haddon Jr., I think they're in a better spot at running back than they were last season. I know we went into last season with like pretty high expectations, especially after the J-Mount signing, but man, the running back situation last year was just so confounding because, you know, you had Torrey Blaylock playing through injuries. You had Xavier Robinson playing a little nicked up and missing some time. Javonte Barnes did the whole redshirt thing that, you know, basically cost them a decent option in the backfield. And then Jaden Ott was just, you know, MIA all year.
And Taylor Tatum.
Yeah, Taylor Tatum the same way. It's just like kind of, So I'm curious to see how it shakes out, but where they were coming out of last season versus where they are coming into this season, given, you know, the Dylan McCullough hire, the emphasis that they've put on making the run game a priority this offseason, you have to feel pretty good about the position. It's just who is it going to be that kind of, you know, takes the reins there?
It's a really interesting group for sure. I mean, Lloyd Avant is one that's really, you know, just where does he fit into this thing? And because, you know, a lot of times, you know, I'm guilty of it too. You kind of get locked in on the literal aspect of the position, which is like, look at the speed, look at his ability to make guys miss. Xavier Robinson's case, you know, the size, where he can run over people. I've always been a big fan of Xavier Robinson. But there's a lot more that goes into the position, right? I mean, being in the right place. The blocking aspect, that was always seemed to hold Taylor Tatum back, you know, getting on the field, stuff like that. And not to pick on him, just that's one example, you know. And so it feels like, and this could be way off, and we'll see how fall camp plays out. And once we get to the games, it feels like Lloyd Avant is probably one of those guys that you can just feel good about having out there doing the right thing, you know, being in the right place. And that may be enough to get him more snaps than anyone else. I mean, we'll see how it plays out. That's the other thing. I mean, we talked about it a second ago, or I touched on it at least, that Dylan McCullough takes over. We don't know Dylan McCullough, right? I mean, you have kind of an idea. DeMarco Murray had been around a long time, and he had been at OU a long time. And so we kind of had an idea of what he was looking for and kind of just a little bit of what to expect. I don't totally know what to expect with Dylan McCullough. He's coming in, taking the position. What does he value? Is he going to rotate a lot? Not so much. Is he kind of like to have a bell cow? I mean, these are things that we just won't know as much until we get into the season and see it. I'm with you in that. I would think Xavier Robinson is the guy. I mean, he's year three. He's been around the longest. He's played really good football at times. I mean, when he's been healthy, I mean, go back to the Alabama game 2 years ago. Last year against Ole Miss, he was really good in a losing in a loss, but he was really good. He was underrated good in Knoxville. He had some really nice moments in that game. Last year beat Tennessee. Like, that's a guy that can really play some good football for you. And Torrey Blaylock, you feel like he's going to make a jump in year two. It's an interesting group because, like you said, last year we're going into the season saying, like, wow, look at this running back room. It's unbelievable. It's loaded. And it felt like Torrey Blaylock was – he was excess. Like, it was like true freshman, you know, don't even worry about it, young fella. He ended up being the guy for a long stretch of the season because he was the only guy healthy. Like, it – you got to keep these guys healthy. It feels like as much – it's true of every position. Health is huge. But it feels like at running back, they've been really snake-bitten with just guys being hurt everywhere. And so keeping these guys upright is going to be big. And I'm curious what the two freshmen can give you, if anything, because I think there's a lot of excitement about Haddon, that he felt like an immediate impact guy. Dezevon Walker, big dude, was awesome in the spring. He was really good in the spring game. Can you get some of that in the season? It feels like it's a pretty good room on paper, but at the same time, you could talk me to any of these five being like the featured guy by the end of the season. It could really be anyone, which is kind of exciting, but also kind of scary. It's like you want someone to emerge.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I just, again, I don't know what that kind of, you know, share the how the distribution of carries is really going to shake out. And I think, you know, this might be like the biggest like position battle question I have going into fall camp.
Sure.
There might be one or two on defense, but I think this is the one where I'm just like, I don't know who's going to be the top guy, you know, when they open the season in, you know, a little bit more than a month against UTEP.
Yeah. So you think if you had to go with one, you think probably Xavier Robinson, if you had to bet.
Yeah. I give Xavier Robinson kind of the benefit of the doubt going into fall camp, like assuming health, that just because he's kind of the most proven guy in the system. But again, we've heard so many good things about Lloyd Avant, really since he got on campus. And again, he's a little bit older guy. I mean, you know, him and Xavier Robinson are both juniors. So he's been around a little bit more, just not at Oklahoma. He's got plenty of experience, you know, whether that's at Colorado State, whether that was at Tulsa as a freshman the year before. He's obviously, you know, played for Kevin Wilson before.
Yeah.
He's got some influence on what they're doing offensively, just in his role. So, again, I'm curious to see how it shakes out. I give Xavier the upper hand entering fall camp. But again, I would not be surprised if like Lloyd Avant just kind of emerged as that dude for a while.
Doesn't it just feel like if they could just have a run game, that would unlock everything. I mean, yeah. The way they could control the clock a little more, take some of the pressure off John Mateer. I mean, that if you could pencil in one of these guys to just have a good season, have a 1,000-yard season, that would just, if you told me that right now, I'm thinking, oh, you had a good year. Like that, yeah. That, they just need it so desperately. Someone's got to step up. So it'll be
and again, I think it's similar to our discussion about, you know, the quarterback play. It's like your tight end should be a lot better. Your offensive line, like you have those young guys that got a lot of starting experience last year, and you know, you're returning four starters from that line a year ago, plus a veteran transfer in Amarian Harris. The run game, the success and failures of the run game aren't just on the running backs last year. It was a group effort because, you know, the tight ends couldn't always set the edge. The offensive line wasn't great at blocking, even though they did much better in pass protection. Sure. It's just there's so many variables to it. And I think that improved play at those other positions will make things easier on these running backs too.
All right, 1 through 10. How you feel about the running back room? We did. You had 7.5 for quarterback. I had 8 for quarterback. I think we're both going to be lower, I would think, on running back. What do you think? Where are you at?
Do you want to go first this time?
Sure, I can go first. I'm thinking like a 7. Maybe that's too high. I mean, I do really like Xavier Robinson. Yeah. I've liked him the last couple of years. I like Torrey Blaylock too. But they've been beat up. Both guys have been hurt. And the fact they were out in the spring makes me a little queasy. They didn't go crazy in the portal. I'll go 7. You could talk me into maybe going a little lower. Not a ton lower. It's not like they're devoid of talent. These are 5 talented guys. Right. But, you know, it's a little scary because you just haven't had a lot of success in this area the last few years for Oklahoma. It's consistent success. We've seen flashes and bursts, but consistent for like a full season putting together. I'll go with like a 7 for me for the running backs.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with a 6. Again, I like the pieces and they seem really, really confident in their options in the backfield. I just don't know who is going to end up being the guy.
It's hard to go much higher when you don't have a clear number one.
Yeah. I you could talk to me in a month, you know, as we're hitting game week and I have a better idea of what that pecking order is going to be like. And maybe I'm a little bit more confident. Again, I think the run game is going to be a lot better this season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Brent Venables used the term pathetic to describe it. I think it was 3.5 yards per carry. So like by default, they should be better. We'll see how much better, but I think it'll be a much improved run game. I just don't know who is going to be leading the way by the end of the season.
No doubt. Interesting group and new coach with obviously Dylan McCullough taking over. It'd be one of the, I think, points of interest that first fall camp practice we're able to get out there, just seeing what the guys look like and see healthy again. That's going to be a big part of this thing over the course of the fall, to say the least. All right, so that's it for running backs. We'll do 2 more positions next week, wide receivers and tight ends, the 2 positions that we mentioned before. Brent Venables has used the word transformed. Lots of new faces at both spots. We'll get into both of those next week, our way through the roster, getting close to the start of the season coming up here in 38 days from now against UTEP. The Sooners Illustrated Podcast will be back after this short break. All right, some other football stuff. We got the preseason stuff late last week, which we knew we would. The preseason poll and the preseason all kind of cleaning some of this stuff up. Tom, preseason poll comes out. Oklahoma just seventh. Feels a little low. I mean, go ahead. I mean, you actually vote on this thing. It feels like if Oklahoma, the way I always kind of look at it when you do these polls, and obviously everyone has expectations. Not everyone, you can't pick all 16 teams to be in the top five. Right? Some people have to call with the poll. But I'll put it this way. If Oklahoma finishes seventh, that would be a major disappointment. That's not what Oklahoma is expecting out of this season. Are you surprised at where they landed? Where did you vote them? Does this feel low? Those are the obvious questions with Oklahoma landing at seven in the preseason poll.
It definitely felt a little low to me.
A little low.
I voted them third. I had Georgia and Texas A&M above them. Now, I might be foolish believing in Texas A&M to finish out the season, but I just think like what they've been able to do under Mike Elko along the lines of scrimmage and, you know, returning some really good pieces, especially at quarterback, that they're going to be contending for an SEC title this year. I mean, we'll see how it shakes out. But I don't know. It's really weird because like the top half of the SEC feels really deep. And I think like one, if you finish first through sixth, you know, you have a real shot at the college football playoff. And, you know, even if like Oklahoma finishes seventh in the league, that doesn't necessarily mean they're the seventh best team in the league. You know what I mean? Like the way tiebreakers shake out, there could be scenarios where, you know, there's three teams tied and it's just kind of, that's where they fall in the mm-hmm. tiebreaker. So look, I had them higher. I think this was a little low. I expect Oklahoma to, you know, be in that group of SEC teams vying for a college football playoff spot. Well, five of them made it last year.
Yeah.
So I think obviously the goal is to kind of, you know, finish in that top five. And, you know, obviously for Oklahoma, the goal is to finish in the top two and make it to Atlanta and compete for an SEC championship. But I think if you finish in that top five, six range, you're going to be in the discussion for a college football playoff berth. And that's where you want to be, you know, come December.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny because we talked about it coming, you know, last week on the post media days show where, you know, it's always so hard to tell because we're in this bubble, the way Oklahoma is viewed around the country. And we talked about it where both you being there in Tampa and me watching the coverage from afar, that it felt like, wow, Oklahoma's getting a lot of buzz. Oklahoma's getting a lot of push that people are saying maybe the best defense in the conference. You know, people are very excited about John Mateer in year two. And we were kind of thinking like, man, they might get picked pretty high in this thing. And they land at seven, which again, feels low. Last year, they were picked 10th and they finished in a tie for fifth, right? This year, they're picked seventh. We'll see where they wind up. It feels like you got to finish at least in the top five to feel like you did your job this season. Obviously, they went 6-2 in the league last year. You feel like that's probably the bar again, is to get to 6-2. Once more, theoretically finish 10-2 in the league if you can go win in Ann Arbor or whatever, however that looks when it's all said and done. Well, I definitely think it's a little low. I mean, it felt like Georgia was gonna be number one. That was no doubt. It felt like probably gonna be Texas in that two slot. You mentioned A&M, Ole Miss obviously went on their run last year. Still have to deal with Alabama. I mean, it's a good league. LSU is a very trendy with Lane Kiffin and all that. But I was a little surprised. I was expecting somewhere either fourth or fifth is kind of what I was anticipating. So seventh is a bit low. Does it mean anything? No. And it was funny because we talked about it last week where the great Barry Trammell asked Brent Venables about Oklahoma getting some buzz. And Brent basically said, no, we're low on all the lists. And we kind of were like, no, I think people like, and Brent ended up being kind of correct because they didn't get a lot of love here in the preseason poll. Not that being picked seventh in the SEC means people think you're going to stink. It's a really good league, lots of good teams. But again, like I said up the top, if they finish seventh, that would be a disappointment. So it seems a smidge low. Does it mean anything? No, but a smidge low, to say the least.
I'm curious if we see more SEC teams finish with like two or three losses just because this is the first year with a nine-game schedule.
That's also – yeah, I said 6-2. You're right. That's not a thing anymore, yeah.
So I'm curious what that looks like and just like kind of how that impacts the standings. I think it's going to be a lot harder for a team to go, sure, you know, 8-1 or 9-0 even in the league as it's currently constructed. Because, you know, every team in the SEC, I think, has, you know, basically a top 25 strength of schedule.
I was going to say, I think the entire SEC is in the top 20. I think. I could be misquoting that. But it's like the top 10, it's 9 out of 10 are SEC. The only exception was Ohio State was the only team in the top 10 that's not from the SEC. I mean, it's unreal. It's going to be carnage. It's going to be very interesting to see if the playoff committee respects that. I'm kind of skeptical of that, frankly, because they're just so beholden to the loss column. They're not, you know, I don't know. I don't know.
And I was going to say, part of the reason Ohio State's strength of schedule is like that is because, you know, they have their Big Ten schedule, but they're also playing Texas early in the season.
In Austin, too. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. We'll see. I think it'll be a really interesting SEC race. Again, I think, you know, you're probably looking at five SEC teams in contention for a playoff spot come the end of the season. But we'll see how it plays out. We'll know soon enough.
No doubt. As far as the preseason All-SEC team, something we kind of speculated on, kind of wondering who could land on that first team or how many guys would get picked. The number is big. 10 mm-hmm. guys is a lot for Oklahoma.
Third most.
How many most? How what?
Where, third right? most.
Third most. So, I mean,
yeah. a lot over of Georgia and Texas.
Yeah, only behind the top two teams, the two teams that are considered pretty perennially like the top two teams in the league or by most, right, going into yeah. the year. Georgia was picked number one to win the conference. So the number is a lot. But two on the first team, and they're both specialists. I mean, you have Tate Sandell, who was Lou Groza award last year. You feel like that was a lock. And then Ben Anderson, who just gets a lot of love at that long snapper spot. Those are your only two first teamers. They didn't get any on offense or defense. Not a shocker on offense. You thought maybe an Isaiah Satania, maybe, but there's a lot of good receivers. But defensively, why are they considered to be at the very top of the best defenses in the country and maybe the best in the league? Didn't get any on the first team. Your second teamers, I'll rattle them off real fast. Eli Bowen, Peyton Bowen, Kip Lewis, David Stone, and Taylor Wine on defense. On offense, you have Michael Fasusi and Isaiah Satania, and then punter Grayson Miller also landed on the second team as well. I mean, it's a kind of a weird thing because, again, the number is big, 10 guys. That's a lot of respect, but you kind of feel like probably should have got a first teamer or two here on defense. No, especially like a David Stone. I think that's
the thing. Yeah, I think I had two guys on my first team on the ballot. I have to go back and look. I had David Stone. I had Kip Lewis. And
yeah,
you know, defensive line in particular, but just a little bit like inside baseball here, the way that the SEC ballot is constructed is like there's no differentiation between defensive tackle and defensive end. It's just defensive linemen. So you might have like an incongruous number of defensive ends or defensive tackles in this group. And you're just picking from all of them. And, you know, it doesn't necessarily surprise me that David Stone wound up second team just because of like how many talented defensive linemen in totality there are in the SEC. But you look at the honors that he's getting from some of these other places where like, oh, hey, he's a preseason All-American. You'd think that would put him kind of on that top tier of SEC linemen. And, you know, we all expect, you know, come next April that, you know, he'll probably hear his name called on the opening day of the NFL draft. So I was a little bit surprised that he didn't make the first team. You know, I think Kip Lewis is another guy that should be in that conversation when you kind of look at the top linebackers in the league. You know, I think I had him up there with, you know, Raylan Wilson at Georgia. Rasheem Biles, the Pitt transfer that's at Texas now, I think he's really good. You know, Xavier Atkins at Auburn, you know, he was an All-American last season. He's certainly got to be in that discussion too. It's just there's a finite number of spots for those first-team selections, but I think it speaks to the depth of Oklahoma's defense that you have six guys that got second-team honors there, even if a couple of them probably should have been first-team.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you got the respect by that many guys land on there. Again, does it mean anything? No. It's a little bit of bulletin board, I guess you could say. I feel like David Stone should definitely be on a first-team guy. And that's a guy that – not that this necessarily should impact the all-conference because they're separate things, but David Stone's probably going to be a top 10 NFL draft pick if all goes to plan, right? I mean, this guy is considered among the best D-tackle prospects in the country. And, again, that doesn't translate always directly to all-conference teams, but – feels like he should probably be on there. You could certainly make an argument for Kip Lewis. I don't think there's any really super egregious snubs. I mean, I would probably say Jaden Jackson would probably be the one. I mean, Jaden Jackson's is such a hard one because he's phenomenal. And we watch him every week and we know what he does. But he's not going to have numbers that are going to blow you away. He's not a numbers guy. Yeah. So I don't know around the country if he's ever going to get the love and respect he probably deserves because he's not going to have the flashy numbers. But obviously, we know Jaden Jackson is an absolute monster.
Especially when healthy. I mean, we saw what he did as a true freshman.
Still good. Yeah.
Last year he was still good, but like was battling some injuries. But again, he's not a guy whose numbers will jump off the page at you. He's a plugger. Like he plugs gaps. He takes on double teams. He opens up things for a guy like David Stone, for a guy like Taylor Wine. And I think he's underappreciated. Again, there's just so many good defensive linemen in the SEC that like someone is bound to get left off there. You look across the league, you know, obviously mentioned the guys at Oklahoma, but, you know, Colin Simmons at Texas, Will Eccles at Ole Miss, Prince Will, Yuman Mielen at LSU now. There's just so many talented and really good defensive linemen that are also going to be in the mix for first round consideration next year, and guys that might be All Americans this year. And it's just a really, you know, deep spot in this league, and it kind of always has been.
Also, not that you're going to get multiple cornerbacks, and I'm good with Eli Bowen being the guy there, but probably Cortland Guillory probably had a pretty good argument too. If you wanted to push for that, I would listen to it for sure. And again, I'm comfortable with Eli Bowen. If I only had to give a vote to one of the two, I would go with Eli Bowen. But Cortland Guillory obviously had a great freshman year, poised to have another big year too. On the flip side, good for Michael Fasusi getting on here. I wasn't sure. We all know Michael Fasusi as his future NFL draft pick. And he's a monster, and he's, you know, one of those cornerstone offensive line and piece of the offense in general that, we all are very excited to watch take up jump in year two. But I wasn't sure around the league. I mean, you know, just a true freshman last year, would he get enough love to get on one of these things? He lands on second team. That's good for him. It kind of shows how much respect he already has around the conference that Fasusi was able to land on here, along with Isaiah Satania being the two offensive guys. I thought that was that was pretty cool for him. I don't think there's really anyone else on offense you could really make an argument for.
Yeah. Well, I know Jim Nagy on Twitter. Yeah. I think he put Jake Michael, he thinks is a snub. Yeah. He thinks he's an All American type of center.
Yeah.
Obviously, John Mateer, you know, they're really high on him, you know, but it's hard when there's only, you know, two or three quarterback spots and you have guys like
Chambliss and Arch.
I don't know if it was Archer, Gunn, or Stockton on the second team.
Oh, yeah, Stockton, too.
They go
yeah.
three deep, so it might have been those three. Obviously, Marcel Reed and Lenore Sellers. You know, you look at the returning quarterbacks in this league, those five plus John Mateer, Sam Leather at LSU is another guy that, you know, people think is going to be really good. I'm really curious to see what Byron Brown does at Auburn, because they're in kind of a similar situation that Oklahoma was last year, where you're trying to import your offense. You know, from, you know, it was Washington State to Oklahoma last year for Oklahoma, and, you know, Auburn's trying to import it from USF with Byron Brown and Alex Golish. So I'm curious to see how that works out in the first year, because it's a difficult thing to do when you're doing that. But I think there's some talented quarterbacks in this league, and I'm curious to see how it shakes out by the end of the season.
Would you put Mateer ahead of Lenore Sellers right now if you were like going to rank quarterbacks? Lenore Sellers was the guy last year, remember, he was the first team guy. Yeah. He didn't really have a great year, but South Carolina didn't have a good year overall. They were, you know.
Yeah, I think I would. I think I did have him on my ballot ahead of him. I think that John just has a better supporting cast around him than Lenoris does. Even though Lenoris might have like one of the most innately talented receivers in the country in Nick Harbor, even though the production may not have been there, but I think like Oklahoma's got a better offensive line, better tight end group, and a better situation for John Mateer to succeed. But as far as like draft potential, like Lenore Sellers is, far and away a better draft prospect than John Mateer, just because of, you know, his size and his skill set.
For sure. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be fun. And again, a lot of respect to get 10 guys. That's a big number, like Tom said, third most in the league. But it kind of felt like no first-teamers on defense, not even one. But it's all just off-season fodder, obviously, stuff for us to talk about. All right, well, cool. We're getting closer. We're very excited. 38 days from kick. You know, fall camp gets going next week. We're going to have lots of coverage. We're very excited for the start of the season. We're about there. It's kind of the last week of like true off seasons this week, because camp gets run next week. We'll have lots of camp coverage. Again, subscribe with us every day. The two of us and Brody Lusk has been awesome as well. So we're pumped. We're very pumped for this season. Before we go, one quick little housekeeping item as well. On the hoop side, we did get the schedule for the season. The entire 26-27 schedule was released by Oklahoma yesterday. Any takeaways at all, Tom? It's a schedule. The opener is Monday, November 2nd against East Texas A&M. That'll be obviously at the Lloyd Noble Center in Norman. The open SEC play with Kentucky, also in Norman, on Saturday, January 2nd. The non-con games are all games that we knew about. I mean, we kind of touch on them here and there. Bedlam Hoops is officially back. Both men and women will play a doubleheader at the Paycom Center on Saturday, December the 12th. anything that stands out to you at all? I mean, it's just a schedule, but throw it out there. Anything at all? Any takeaways, anything that stands out?
It feels like the first time in a long time that they've not closed the season with Texas.
Where is that game?
They go to Arkansas. The final Saturday of the season.
That could be a fun game. If it actually meant something, that would be a fun drive. But the game's got to mean something.
Yeah, but it's just the last several years, it feels like they always end the season in Austin. Oh, yeah. So it's a little bit of a change up there. Again, you mentioned the SEC opener at home against Kentucky. You know, if Oklahoma has a good showing in non-conference play, that has a chance to be a really exciting atmosphere. I know Kentucky fans travel. So I would expect, you know, a good amount of them, but I'm curious to see what the crowd would look like at the Lloyd Noble Center there. And, you know, as far as the non-conference schedule, I mean, again, we went over this. They play some, you know, interesting games, certainly a lot of like high major opponents, but again, only one of those is at home, and that's Syracuse. So,
which will be an interesting game.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly. Cause they're in their first year under Jerry McNamara. See how he works out at his alma mater. But again, you kind of had that 5-game runway before your first real test.
Going out to Fort Myers. Yeah.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how they do in Fort Myers. It's felt like for the last several years, like they get that first test around Thanksgiving weekend, usually at these, you know, multi-team events. So, yeah.
A little bit of a softer landing because remember they went to Spokane in the second game last year. So definitely, like you said, a more of a runway to kind of get their feet wet.
Yeah, but Pitt and Purdue and Fort Myers should be really interesting. Like that 4-game stretch at the kind of end of November heading into December could be really pivotal for what to expect from this team as it enters SEC play. Cause you got Pitt and Purdue and Fort Myers and you host Syracuse and then you go up to Tulsa to play Arizona State. I think we'll learn a lot about this team during that 2-week stretch.
No doubt. It's an interesting team. It's a very interesting group. And we've talked about it. It's a big year, obviously for Porter Moser and a lot of excitement around that program. You know, obviously Lucas McKay coming in and they're just, you know, it's an interesting schedule. Like you said, the runway, some pretty reachable non-con games with Syracuse, obviously in Norman, then Arizona State's in Tulsa, SMU in Dallas, Bedlam with Paycom Center. It's a fun schedule. And, you know, not to give away Brody Lusk's reporting over at Sooners Illustrated. That's why you subscribe, but Oklahoma's probably going to add to this roster. So keep an eye out. I mean, there is a lot of time between now and the start of the season still. Oklahoma has some roster spots. And they're probably – this team is probably not complete just yet in terms of there's very well some changes that are still going to come to this team. So, again, subscribe, be with us every single day. I'm really excited. We got a whole football season before we get there, but I'm very excited for our hoops coverage this year. Adding Brody in with Tom and I, we're going to be all over the place, and we're going to be able to staff a lot of these games. So we're going to have a lot of coverage. Hopefully the team can win to – warrant it for us as soon as illustrated, but if you're a hoops fan, you need to be dialed because we're going to be all over. And Brody's obviously crushing it. He's one of the best guys that there is in the market for this. So definitely excited. Long way to go. A lot of football between now and then, but fun to look ahead to hoops coming up, obviously the beginning of November. All right, I think that's it. We'll be back next week. Again, we'll start to comb through the rest. We'll continue to comb through the rest of the roster, wide receivers, tight ends. And we'll set the table for fall camp. What are going to be our fall camp storylines? What are we going to be watching for between the start of the first practice up into the first game week as that kicks off next week? Obviously, again, stay plugged in as soon as illustrated. Obviously, on the boards, we'll let you know kind of what – we don't really know what the coverage looks like just yet in terms of when local media day is going to be, when Brent Venable is going to address, you know, the media for the first time, when the first practice, if it'll be open. We'll figure that stuff all out later, but obviously be plugged in over on the website, oklahoma.247sports.com. We'll communicate all that good stuff, and we're going to have tons and tons of coverage on the site and here on the YouTube channel as well. Keep an eye out for post-practice interviews, practice highlights. That's where all that stuff lives. So subscribe to the YouTube channel and be with us every single day over there as well. I think that's it for now. For Tom Green, I'm Josh Callaway. We'll see you guys next time right back here, as always, on Sooners Illustrated.